Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We're going to talk to Jonathan Alter this hour, Gwen Ifill this hour. We have Steven Pinker today, the evolutionary biologist. He took part in the Personal Genome Project to find out about some of his personality traits and their genetic origins, and has some very interesting things to say about that. And the puzzle master, Will Shortz, will join us today to talk about this new thing that is showing up in the New York Times and other newspapers called Ken, that is kind of like Sudoku. He also is presiding over a crossword puzzle championship in New York this week. So, Gwen Ifill, Jonathan Alter, Steven Pinker, and Will Shortz, an all-star lineup. We'll have a lot of fun. We'll talk about the issues, of course, the president, of course. Now, good news for President Obama, bad news for Republicans. In a pair of major polls out today, the Washington Post ABC News poll and the CBS News New York Times poll both find very high levels of approval for and optimism about Obama's leadership, and people judge him as much more bipartisan, or at least willing to cross party lines, than the Republicans in Congress. This optimism about the president comes despite pessimism about the economy, and it comes as the president addresses a joint session of Congress for the first time tonight, in effect, his first State of the Union address. We will talk to two major Washington journalists this hour, as I said, later, Gwen Ifill from PBS, right now Newsweek columnist Jonathan Alter. He has the cover story this week about how Obama can talk us out of a depression if he works it right. And, of course, Jonathan is the author of The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope, published by Simon & Schuster. Hey, Jonathan, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
What do you think about these remarkable poll numbers? Like 77% told The Times and CBS they are generally optimistic about the next 4 years with Barack Obama.
Well, I think he's laid the groundwork, kind of put down a good template, for what you could call psychological as well as political success. In other words, what he's been saying to people is things are going to get worse before they get better. But if you come along on this, ride with me, eventually they will get better after the implementation of my plan. And it's a rather mature message. It's not a cheerleading message. He's not trying to say that things are going to get better in 2009. Normally, Americans have a short attention span for this kind of thing. But I think he's laid the groundwork pretty well so far, and things can change. But the indications are that he's on the right trajectory.
At the same time, though, that 77% are optimistic about the next 4 years with Barack Obama, 60% are concerned that they or someone in their household will lose their own jobs. So personal pessimism, yet optimism about the next 4 years with Obama. How could they be pessimistic about their own future, so many folks, but think he will make their futures better?
Because he sold his message of hope. I think one of the reasons that he was able to sell it, again, at least so far, is that people are sophisticated to know the difference between the short term and the medium or longer term, and between a kind of a blind optimism, which I guess would be best represented by what John McCain said last fall that helped doom his campaign when he said the fundamentals of the economy are sound.
That was an optimism. That was denial.
Right. People are not into that. So what they want is this kind of balance between truth-telling, somebody who trusts them enough to tell them the hard truths, which we're going to hear some tonight, and also a longer range sense of hope that America can bounce back as it always does. So it's a kind of a two-step, and like any other confidence game, it requires a psychological sophistication on the part of the person who is implementing implementing it. And I think, at least I guess my argument in Newsweek this week is that Obama possesses the tools to execute that particular game.
Your book is The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope, which, of course, was written really just before anybody really thought we were going to get into any kind of parallels in modern life with the Roosevelt era. So you were kind of prescient in that, or at least you had good marketing timing.
Yeah. bad news for the economy was good news for me. But we are in another defining moment now, and this is something that President Obama said on election night in Grant Park. He used that phrase, a defining moment, as he had earlier in the campaign, and because I think he realizes that even though there are a lot of differences between now and 1933, that we are at a pivot point in American history, and many of the challenges, whether it's restoring the free flow of credit, propping up our banks, putting people to work, are indeed almost uncanny in how similar they are to what we went through 75 years ago.
And what about the communication style that you were talking about before, with Obama being kind of therapist-in-chief, or I think you said teacher-in-chief in your article? How reminiscent is this of FDR in his first 100 days?
Very. You know, FDR's first fireside chat started out with the words, "My friends, I want to speak to you tonight for a few moments about banking." And he went on to outline his bank rescue plan, which was a nationalization of some banks, but without using the N-word, and which is, I think, a similar challenge to what Obama faces. You have to take over some banks, but at least publicly reject the idea that you're nationalizing. And then, of course, Roosevelt went even further, and he called the bank closures by the festive name of bank holiday, as if somehow we were going to enjoy this. And that was all part of the psychological lifting of the country. I'm not sure that Obama, even though in an IQ way he's more intelligent than Franklin Roosevelt, I'm not sure that in terms of his uplifting temperament, his ability to make you feel better when you just hear his voice, which is what Roosevelt was able to do. Churchill compared meeting Roosevelt to opening your first bottle of champagne. And I'm not sure that Obama has yet established that kind of connection with the American public, but it's early yet, and with some fine-tuning of his public presentation, maybe a little bit more humor, if not tonight, then on other occasions. And I think he can make that more lasting connection that FDR made. Remember, we didn't get out of the Depression until World War II. But Roosevelt was immensely popular throughout the entire 1930s, and for a reason that Obama really gets and has talked about, which is that Roosevelt was working the problem, experimenting, trying to find different solutions. He called for bold, persistent experimentation. Take a method and try it. If it fails, take another method and try that. But above all, try something. And that's what Obama has also been saying. He's been using that word experimentation. And the American public might say, well, I'm not a guinea pig. You know, I don't want to be experimented on one level. But on another level, Brian, they're saying, yes, experiment. Work this problem until we find something that can bring our economy back.
Jonathan Alter, author of The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope, with me on WNYC, also Newsweek columnist who has the cover story about the tone that Obama is setting in Newsweek this week. And another term that people are using is father figure.
Well, you know, at one point I do call Obama Daddy-O, because I think that he, with the stimulus package, he's going to be able to go into communities all over the United States for the next 4 or even 8 years and cut ribbons, appear at you know, construction projects, school projects, whatever, and essentially say it's, you know, it's Daddy-O here to bring you goodies from Washington. In the past, presidents, in the recent past, presidents have really not been able to do that. They've maybe been able to go out and highlight, you know, encouraging nonprofit programs, but government spending had such a bad odor for so many years that they didn't really go out and trumpet what Washington was providing. And Obama's going to be able to do that. FDR was called father, so he did some of that himself.
He was?
By his family and some other people in his circle.
And Bush had father figure problems of his own and didn't quite succeed in establishing that image in the crises that he had to deal with. Have you studied Reagan in his first 100 days? Another great communicator, obviously, who came in during hard times and talked about mourning in America. Obama isn't that sunny.
He's not that sunny. I think because he thinks it's a little early to be that sunny before the pieces are in place, but he also might just not be as have that same natural sense of sunniness that helped both Roosevelt and Reagan, who patterned himself on Roosevelt, interestingly. But Obama's very interested in Reagan as well as Roosevelt, and I actually last year had a little discussion with him about it. You may remember that Bill Clinton got annoyed because Obama said that Ronald Reagan had changed the trajectory of American politics and that Clinton had not.
Right.
And I think he is looking not on the substance of Reagan's policies, but on Reagan's mastery of the theater of the American presidency for some hints of how to move forward. And Reagan had a very successful period in early 1981, although his legislative program only went through Congress after he got shot. And I think Obama would, all things considered, you know, prefer not to do it that way.
I guess not. And something Reagan-esque that I think I'm seeing out there right now, tell me if you agree, people like Obama so far more than they like his policies. People used to approve of Reagan despite being skeptical about his policies. And people, according to these polls out today, are very divided now over whether the stimulus bill will work. They don't like the bank bailout. They don't like the auto company bailout. And they're worried about the deficits he's piling up for the future. And yet, the president makes them optimistic, and he gets very high approval ratings. Reagan had that personal ability to inspire confidence in the face of doubt about his policies.
Yeah, that's a great point. But I think that some of the policy prescriptions will kick in, you know, soon enough if they start to work. So the proof is really in the pudding for Obama, and the policies will become much more successful if we start to move in the right direction, if not out of recession entirely. And the other thing is that some of these policies represent very tough choices, and Obama has been kind of laying the groundwork for that, starting in the campaign, which was smart of him. He was basically saying, "It's not going to be easy. This is going to be a rough, a rough period for the United States." And by doing that, he kind of creates a little buffer zone around his own popularity and almost a critical distance between the policies and himself by creating low expectations. The problem, though, is that lowering expectations can heighten anxiety because people, you know, don't feel that we're going to come out of this anytime soon, and
right.
It makes them very nervous, and the market tumbles and the rest.
Another balancing act. And one other thing in our last minute, and we're going to talk more with Gwen Ifill about this in a few minutes, but the polls, these same big polls out today, show people are very disapproving of the Republicans now. Three-quarters of those polled said Obama is genuinely trying to work with Republicans, but only 30% said Republicans were trying to work with the president. And more than 60% said the Republicans opposed the stimulus bill simply for political reasons. That is tough public medicine for the GOP.
It is, and they, you know, they miscalculated. They played a kind of a short-term cable news game where they went on and, you know, picked apart the stimulus without offering any real alternative and played Dr. No to Barack Obama, kind of brushed away his extended hand. Remember, they announced that they were going to oppose every one of them in the House was going to oppose the stimulus even before meeting with Obama and listening to his pitch. And so I, at the time, a lot of, you know, talking heads, I think, completely misread this because they won the, you know, 24-hour news cycles 3 weeks ago by getting their people out on cable TV faster than the White House did, leaving the White House a little flat-footed. But it was pretty clear at the time that, you know, Eric Cantor is no Newt Gingrich, and that they were not really in a position to offer the country any kind of alternative. And when you're exposed that way, the public reaction can be brutal.
All right. So we're going to pick this up with Gwen Ifill in a few minutes to talk about what the president might actually say tonight, how the Republicans might actually change their tune as a result of poll responses like this as we go into the big health care reform debate and some other things. Gwen Ifill coming up, and we thank Jonathan Alter, senior editor, columnist for Newsweek. He has the cover story this week about Obama's confidence game, as it's called, how he can be the kind of therapist in chief for the country and why that actually might matter. And his book is The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope. Always a pleasure, Jonathan. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.
I know we can make it. I know darn well we can work it out. Yes, we can. I know we can. Can. Yes, we can. Can. Oh, okay. We if we want. Yes, we can. Can. I know we can make it work. I know we can make it if we try. Oh, yes, we can.